On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. You may be listening live here in the Seattle area on an Alternative Talk 1150 AM KKNW or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio. Or you might be listening after the fact on one of the 50 stations where this ends up, including on ChristineUpchurch.com. But whenever and wherever you're joining us from today, so grateful you're here, and you're going to be grateful too because we've got another great conversation. But before I share who our guest is today, I want to say hello to the man behind the technology who just seems to be a great multitasker, who's in a quite the Christmassy sweater, yeah! Mr. Benny Mathers.
Well, Festivus around here for the rest of us, as far as we have a little, it's not a holiday thing. Well, I guess it is a holiday thing, but they said today is to bring your festive holiday sweater. Uh-huh. So I busted out Kris Kringle. He's got some sunglasses on. Yeah. There's a little pocket in the front for a beverage holder. It is a beverage holder for some beverage that's clearly empty right now, which
Oh, dear.
I only got an hour left in the shift, so.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to it. Did you get all your shopping done?
Almost.
Cats got everything they needed?
Yeah.
Their stockings?
And my kids, you know, it's like I'm the kind of person who will get things that I'd buy for my kids anyway, and then wrap them up at Christmas time because it just happens to be around Christmas.
Right.
So there are plenty of packages under the tree. I'm a little behind on some of the stuff that I normally do because lost power all day yesterday.
It was pretty wet and wild and windy, so
to
speak.
Oh, my goodness.
So everything okay up at your house? I mean,
yeah, okay. Well, it's funny because I will often be like enclosing the house in white light visually and sending
love
to
the trees. You're the brightest one on the block right now. Well, you were the brightest one on the block, I guess.
But it's, you know, I've got all these like 60, 70-foot trees, and when you get 60-mile-per-hour gusts and you're this little house in the middle of it, not so little, but, you know, small enough relative to the trees, that, you know, it's like things come flying down.
A little nervous, but you were protected. I guess there's the bright side to it.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's what you want to call it, Benny, sure.
I go back and forth between my, you know, my conscious level and then my human, like, oh, crap, I hope that doesn't hit.
Reality check.
Yes.
But everything, I mean, overall is okay.
Yeah, the yard's a mess, but no trees down on my property.
I'd give you something to do, I guess.
Who
is this guy? Get your sons to help.
Yeah,
okay. Who is this guy?
Yeah, and I'm grateful to be here today. I'm grateful to have power back.
I am too. I'm thankful you're here.
And it's, you know, just a few days before Christmas.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. It happened fast. It happened fast. And, you know, our associate producer, Peggy Snow, has been saying for a long time, we need to have somebody on the show who talks about Enneagrams. And I've got the perfect person to do that. And she chose our guest today, Beatrice Chestnut. She's a licensed psychotherapist, a coach, a business consultant, and she's based out in San Francisco. So same coast, but a little farther south. She has her doctorate in communication studies and a master's in clinical psychology. She's been a student of the Enneagram system since 1990. And she's the author of a couple of different books, The Complete Enneagram, 27 Paths to Greater Self-Knowledge, and The 9 Types of Leadership, Mastering the Art of People in the 21st Century Workplace. She was the president of the International Enneagram Association from 2006 to 2007, and she offers public workshops on the Enneagram internationally. She focuses on using it as a tool for personal and professional transformation. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Beatrice Chestnut. Hi, Beatrice.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
You know, I'm really appreciative that as a part of my research, you sent me a link to take this Enneagram survey. Now, I have to tell you that, there's so many systems out there, and I feel a little overwhelmed by them. On the other side of learning what category we belong to, you know, there's got to be a real payoff. And I'll tell you, I found it very fascinating. But before we get into some of the details about that. I'm just curious about how you found your way to the Enneagram and why it is you've been inspired to share this with the world.
So I learned the Enneagram in 1990, actually kind of by accident, from a friend's father. So I had grown up with a guy who was a good friend of mine from junior high on. And when I was in my early 20s, I learned the Enneagram from his father, who was a psychiatrist at Stanford, and who had recently come upon the Enneagram and just, you know, even being a psychiatrist, thought it was like the best thing he'd ever seen to help people understand themselves. So
my goodness, that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, and he was starting an Enneagram school with Helen Palmer, who is a person who wrote one of the first popular books about the Enneagram. And so one night over dinner, he said, "This is what it is. I think here's what type I think you might be." Uh-huh. And I went home and read a few chapters of Helen Palmer's book, and I was completely surprised in a good way, and really it felt like it changed my life almost immediately in terms of giving me so much information about myself, part that I already knew, but then parts that I barely wanted to admit and didn't really want to see in myself, but just gave me so much self-knowledge, and it almost like, what's going on that there's something like this that can show me so much about myself to myself in a way that I never thought possible. So that's when I learned it, and I went through their school. They started an Enneagram training program, and I happened to move to Chicago to do my doctorate at that point, and I had a cousin that lived there who happened to know the Enneagram, and he gave me some of the books of people who were sort of talking about the ancient teachings behind the Enneagram, and so that made me even more interested.
So how far does it go back? You talk about ancient teachings.
Well, no one really knows exactly where it came from, but I think it's hundreds, probably thousands of years old. You find traces of it in some ancient teachings and the Greeks. And the thing I like to point to that I think is, you know, it's hard to find hard proof because a lot of the Enneagram related teachings came through secret schools, where people couldn't really reveal what they were doing.
Sure.
But the thing I like to point to that I think is pretty clear evidence of that the Enneagram has been around for a long time is Homer's Odyssey. You know, this is one of the first books ever written down. It's a story of homecoming of Odysseus, who invented the Trojan horse after the Trojan War. He's going home. A metaphoric journey home to the true self, and he visits nine mythic lands with nine mythic creatures, and he encounters all these challenges, as you know. And it turns out these nine lands and their creatures match the themes of the Enneagram types exactly.
Isn't that interesting?
And he visits these lands in order as they're arrayed around the Enneagram 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Fascinating.
And so I think that kind of made me think, okay, there's at least some, there's other kind of forms of proof in like esoteric Christianity and places like that, but no one really knows where it comes from, but it's thought to be very old.
So on a high level, what is the Enneagram?
The Enneagram is, it's different things, but I think mainly it's a personal growth tool. It's a way of gaining insight into our automatic patterns that form our personality. And it sort of highlights things about ourselves and the way we operate in the world. And it's a growth tool in that it's kind of based on the idea that our personality isn't all of who we are. It's only that part of us that developed to survive in the world. And so it helps us, and it gets us to a certain point. But when, in adulthood, it becomes, in a way, like it becomes self-limiting because we tend to do the same things we've done over and over again because they work. We tend to lean on the same strengths that we have, and we don't realize that we're not developing other parts of ourselves. We don't see certain blind spots. And so the Enneagram highlights what our blind spots are. It highlights both our strengths and our challenges so that we can recognize what we might need to learn about ourselves and kind of break out of old defensive patterns and grow more into who all of who we can be, you know, to manifest more of our higher potential.
So do you think that it's, you're talking about, like, you know, based on our upbringing and stuff, do you think it's all nurture? Do you think there's a nature piece of it as well? Do you think we're born with certain tendencies?
I do. I think it's a lot nature.
Uh-huh.
I think we are born as who we are. We're not born as sort of a blank slate. Certainly nurture, early environment has an effect. And a lot of people who study this have come to the point where it's not nature versus nurture,
uh-huh.
it's nature and nurture,
sure.
or nature needs nurture.
Uh-huh.
So I think there are certain things nurture influences, and certainly people can look back on their childhood and say, oh, I can see how this personality type that I ended up being kind of worked in my environment and how I used it as a strategy.
Right.
But I think it's really based on inborn tendencies to a large degree.
Mm-hmm. And I think that any parent who's had multiple kids can attest to the fact that our children arrive with personality intact. It's like kind of like there are certain things that can be nurtured or kind of, you know, helped to kind of shift away from. But generally speaking, we arrive here with
yes.
personality and I think purpose as well.
Yeah, I agree.
When we return from our break, I'm going to have Beatrice share with you about the nine different types, what that means, and also talk a little bit about subtypes, which really helps to inform us better about who we are and what our strengths and weaknesses are and how we can evolve. Stay tuned for more with Beatrice Chestnut here in just a few moments.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Are you ready to finally feel empowered and knowledgeable in your political stance? Let Marsha Padilla Goad educate you on exactly how important grassroots advocacy is in a relatable way to all perspectives. Tune in to Grassroots Advocacy Radio with Marsha every first Tuesday of the month at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Visit DynamicsInPublicAffairs.com.
Are you ready to shift gears from spiritual seeker to spiritual rock star? Let Nova Whiteman be your aligning force that will help you navigate the ups and downs of this human experience. Tune in to Spiritual Alignment Radio with Nova Whiteman every second Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit NovaWhiteman.com. That's NovaWhiteman.com.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Christine Epchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. And I've really enjoyed watching Benny dancing to that music just the way they do in the Peanuts.
In the Peanuts. You remember the scene. They're on stage
and they're all doing
their own little
dance. I was
dance.
In my mind, right. And then you started doing that with your head.
And I turned to the side, and you do like the Linus, where you go back and forth.
Yeah, those of you who are watching online are going to wish that the camera had been pointed to Benny.
No, you do just fine.
Beatrice, I'm fascinated by this system of 9 different types, and I know that there's subtypes, and that's informative too, but can you first please share with our listeners about these 9 different types and what some of the characteristics are so that people can just start to think in terms of who they might be?
Sure. I do like to start with the 3 centers of intelligence. There are 9 types, and the Enneagram's based on, it has a whole mathematical basis, but it's based on the idea that we have 3 centers of intelligence. We're 3 brain beings. We have a head, a heart, and a body, and all of which are kind of co-equal centers of intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And there are 3 types that kind of live more from the head than the other 2 centers. 3 types that live more from the heart, and 3 types that live more from the body.
Right.
And the 3 body-based types are 8, 9, and 1. And each of them have their character is a bit shaped by their connection to anger. Doesn't mean they always get angry. It just means their character is shaped by the relationship they have to that key emotion. I would say 8s, 9s, and 1s. 8s tend to overdo anger, 9s underdo anger, and 1s are kind of in between.
Uh-huh.
Starting with 1s, 1s are sometimes called, and I don't use the names in my book because I think they can confuse as much as they enlighten, but I do like when people are first hearing about it, it does give a little bit of information to start with.
Sure.
1s are the perfectionist or the reformer.
Uh-huh.
These are people that tend to see very clearly how something could be more perfect or something could be improved. They tend to be a bit self-critical, and they tend to see the world in terms of right and wrong, and they want to do the right thing, and they want to be good. They want to be virtuous, and so they can tend to be very focused on making the world a better place and improving things. I would say 9s are sometimes called the mediator or the peacemaker.
Uh-huh.
These are people who like to create harmony where they go. They like everyone to get along. They tend to be very connected to people. They don't like conflict. So they tend to be people who diffuse conflict naturally. They can see all sides of an issue, but they can sometimes have a hard time knowing what their own view is or what their own acting in their own behalf because their attention goes out to others and how they can connect with others and adapt to others and kind of make things go more smoothly in the world of others. And then 8s are sometimes called the challenger or the boss.
Uh-huh.
8s tend to be their attention, and the Enneagram is based a lot on where your attention goes. And 8's attention goes to power and control, and who has the power? Will they be fair? Will they be just? 8's like to make big things happen.
Uh-huh.
They can tend to be rebellious and kind of go against people, especially if they think they're not being just or they're not. Protecting other people. They can be very generous and protected and big-hearted, but can also have a big energy, and other people often find them intimidating because of this big energy. 2s, 3s, and 4s are what we call heart types, so they come more from emotion, and they focus more on relationship, more as a primary focus. 2s are sometimes, this is my type, 2s are sometimes called the giver or the helper, but I think this can be misleading because it's actually strategic help. 2s want to be liked by others, and supporting others is often a means to getting liked.
Uh-huh.
They tend to focus on relationships a lot. They tend to be very generous and supportive of others, but it's a kind of a strategy to get their needs met without having to ask directly because they often got the message in childhood that it wasn't okay to be needy.
Right.
So they tend to focus on others.
Okay, so then
type 3 is sometimes called the performer. Type 3s, it's interesting. Type America is a type 3 culture. Type 3s are very work-focused.
Uh-huh.
2s and 3s try to create an image to be liked or approved of. 2s try to create an image of being supportive, helpful, friendly, loving. Threes try to create an image of being successful and productive. Uh-huh. So they tend to be very work-focused. They're the workaholics of the Enneagram. They tend to be very focused on being effective and productive. They're, even though they're heart types, they tend to turn down the volume on their feelings because feelings get in the way of doing. And they're very focused on doing and achieving and goals, very at task orientation. Because if you're going to be successful, it pays to be able to kind of meet any goal that you want. So three is a type that's very at home, say, in American corporate culture, because they're very results-oriented.
Yep.
Fours, sometimes called the romantic or the artist, and fours are probably the type that's most in touch with their emotion and tends to feel emotion very deeply in a wider range of emotions. They can feel things very intensely. They tend to focus on comparing themselves to others, and sometimes they find themselves to be lacking or deficient or kind of needing something to be better and other people have it. Other times they find themselves to be special, and so fours can have an issue around connecting with people. They tend to want to be understood. They value authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be motivated to express their deep emotions, often through artistic endeavors, and they're very concerned with aesthetics, and their attention also goes to what's missing or what could be there that could make things better.
Uh-huh. So that was all three of the heart. What about the head?
The head types are 5, 6, and 7. So 5, 6, and 7 all have a relationship to fear. 2s, 3s, and 4s, their relationship is to sadness or grief. And again, these are underlying emotions, not things that people necessarily walk around feeling. But 6s, 5s, and 7s are all very mental, more intellectual. 5s, I would say, are the most introverted type, the least in touch with their emotions. They tend to automatically disconnect from emotions, and they tend to kind of almost take refuge in the head. They tend to be very good at, they become experts in their field. They're very oriented toward knowledge, information, data, facts, things like that. And they tend to like a lot of private space and can be focused on boundaries and having enough distance to feel a sense of that they have their own personal space and control of their own boundaries. Sometimes people think fives are more insensitive because they can seem a little bit quiet and distant, but actually they're very sensitive, which is why they need a little more space.
Interesting. Even though they're head-based, they're sensitive.
Yes, they're sensitive, but it's almost like not having. I've heard it said like a cat that doesn't have hair. It can be sort of they pick up on things very easily, and it can feel overwhelmed, especially by other people's emotions.
Right,
which is why they need some space and they need to be able to maintain control over time and space and energy and resources like that.
Yeah.
Then type 6 is type 5 is sometimes called the observer or the quiet specialist.
Makes sense.
Type 6 is sometimes called the contrarian or the devil's advocate. 6s are types that are more centrally fear-based, and these are people who their attention goes to looking out for threats and danger on the horizon and being prepared in case something goes wrong. So they tend to be good problem solvers that sometimes become problem seekers because they're sort of thinking, okay, what could go wrong here and how can I create contingency plans so that if the worst happens, I'm ready.
Right.
And so in three different ways. And with 6, we haven't talked about subtypes, but it's almost hard. The 3 6s are very different. And it sort of goes with the idea of there being different responses to fear, like fight or flight. Everyone kind of understands that.
Sure.
So there are different ways of going about sort of managing fear and managing relationships. They tend to be good at reading people, seeing through false pretenses, because, again, their attention goes to is this person trustworthy? Do their actions match what they say? They're looking out a little bit for what could go wrong or who might be dangerous in that way. But also really good at getting a lot done and good troubleshooters on a work team, things like that.
Interesting. And that leaves one type left.
One type left, 7. So 7s are sometimes called the epicure or the adventurer. When people first learn the Enneagram, they often want to be sevens or want to hang out with sevens, because sevens are kind of the fun type on the Enneagram. They they like to keep things light. They're very positive. They tend to look on the bright side. But this is, all of the types have a kind of an ego strategy, a survival strategy that's based in a kind of pattern of defense. And so sevens pattern, which is often unconscious, is they're moving toward pleasure to move away from pain. So there's an underlying fear that's not always conscious of getting stuck in an unpleasant emotion like anxiety or discomfort or fear or even boredom. And so there's almost a need to make things light, to be stimulated. They like a lot of mental stimulation. They're good at generating ideas. In the workplace, they tend to be very entrepreneurial because they think out of the box. They are very future-oriented because they're, again, unconsciously going away from what could be unpleasant in the moment now to thinking about something exciting and interesting in the future. So they tend to be good at planning, good at envisioning what good things that could happen, again, both as a strength and as a way of kind of moving away from something that an underlying fear of getting trapped in something unpleasant.
This is fascinating. We're going to be heading to a break, and I want you as a listener to see if one of these categories resonated with you. And for those of you who've been listening for a while, I have to tell you that I took Beatrice's survey to figure out what type I am. See if you can guess what it is. I'll share that when we return. Stay tuned for more with Dr. Beatrice Chestnut here in just a few moments.
Calling all ladies. Are you struggling with neck, back, shoulder pain, or postural issues? You actually might have a related bra problem. Talk to Maria Monti at the Healthy Bra Company. She is a professional postural therapist who offers custom fitted, custom altered bras in 2,500 size combinations specific to your body type, shape, size, anatomical features, and breast weight. Call Maria today to find out more at 360-815-3205.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on 1150 AM KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, I think that I could envision them going and decorating the little tree in Charlie Brown Christmas. Is that what that music was to?
Yeah, it's the O Tannenbaum. We actually, the first year the boys were born, we actually got one of those little trees. One that was from the movie, because they actually make one just like the one from the movie, too.
Do they really?
Yes, it's got one little ball hanging off the top of it, curled all the way down to the floor practically. But because, you know, we were limited on space. We had just kid stuff all over. And, you know, when you have twins, and you didn't really know you were having twins until you found out, the house got packed pretty quick full of items.
Sure.
And so we ended up getting a tree topper. They sell the top of a tree that didn't really sell, or from the bottom half didn't work out so well. So they'll cut the top off and they'll sell that separately.
Oh,
so it was
tree.
Cute. We made a little cute tree.
That's great. Yeah. And it's great that your kids are what, eight now? Your boys
They
are
will
eight?
Be eight next month. Yes.
Yeah. In January. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and my kids are all grown, so
the spirit's still there, though, Christine.
It is.
Oh, okay.
It's I love it. And, good. But it's also fun with little ones.
Absolutely.
I'm so grateful to have Dr. Beatrice Chestnut here today. She is talking about the Enneagram, and her books are very informative. And I tell you that I'm fascinated by this system. Now, Beatrice, you know, as I said on the break, I've seen so many different systems, and I often find them overwhelming. Like, how can I get pertinent information out of this if I'm just overwhelmed looking at the information? But I took the assessment that you sent to me. And then when I was reading the assessment, the results, it typed me as an eight, which is like the challenger, the boss. And in many, many ways, it fit perfectly, including my fear of vulnerability. You know, it's like one of my challenges in this life has been like the more public I get to share some of my vulnerabilities. And I did that recently in my TEDx talk when I shared about how I was molested as a young child. But it was like this huge leap for me to be that vulnerable that publicly.
Wow. Yeah, that's it. That's and when eights can allow themselves to be vulnerable, it's very powerful, because their natural tendency is to kind of overcompensate and sort of unconsciously avoid vulnerability and overcompensate in expressing power and strength.
Uh-huh.
So that's exactly the growth path, and that sounds like a very amazing, profound thing that you did.
Yeah, you know, or crazy, depending on, you know, which part of me is in control at the moment.
Yeah,
but it's I was fascinated by it. And then you also have subtypes, and there were certain things within the type 8. It was like, I'm not sure that this aligns perfectly, but there was so much that was a yes. But by the time I got to reading about what my subtype was, I thought, you know, this system is incredibly accurate. So can you share with our listeners what the subtypes are and why you sort of hone it down to that next level?
Sure. So the subtypes are the idea that for each of the nine types, they're actually three versions of each type. There are three kinds of three types based on which of one of three instincts we have that, again, all people have, but we tend to favor one more than the other. So we tend to favor one center of intelligence more than the other. We tend to live more from one type within that center.
Uh-huh.
And then within our type, we tend to, one of these three instincts tends to dominate our experience. And the three instincts are basically these kind of groupings of instincts for self-preservation in the world, just sort of surviving, focus on, you know, resources, are you safe, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And then the social instinct, which is about relating to the group or what your relationship is to the collective or other people generally.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one-to-one instinct, which is a lot about interpersonal bonding with one other person. And you can see how all three of these can function as survival strategies that reflect the animal part of us, our animal intelligence.
Right, right. And what's your subtype?
So my subtype is self-preservation. So that dominates my experience. So I'm a self-preservation too. And this is even in the Enneagram world, the subtype component of the system hasn't always been well understood. And sometimes people say, "Well, I'm just learning nine. 27 sounds like a lot."
Uh-huh.
But when you learn your type, one of nine, it's a good idea to look into the subtypes, because they just give more specific, more nuanced information. And like you said, reading about the type 8, there was a lot that fit, but there were some that didn't fit. Oftentimes when you read the subtype piece, which gives more data, more information, more specific, more nuanced description of what your personality might be like and how it gets expressed in the world, that often can give you just more information where you can get even more clarity on who you are in your personality.
So as a giver helper who has a subtype of self-preservation, how does that manifest itself in your life?
So for me, a two that has a self-preservation instinct tends to be a bit more fearful than other twos.
Uh-huh.
So twos tend to be very outgoing. They tend to really reach out to people a lot. Their energy goes out. They focus on other people, and they almost create a sense of comfort and power for themselves by being supportive of other people. They can do quite a lot for other people, and they're just tuned into that. For me, as a self-preservation two, it's like I have more ambivalence about connecting with people. There's part of me that really wants to connect with people, but then there's also a kind of a fearfulness that sort of brings me backwards. So it's a little bit like a moving forward, but also moving backwards.
Uh-huh.
There's a fear of like, well, what if they want too much for me, or what if they reject me, or what will be asked of me? Even though I want to be generous, there's a little bit of a twos can have a hard time saying no.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, what if I get in a situation where I won't really want to say yes, but I can't say no?
Uh-huh.
So there's more fearfulness. There's a little bit more of a childlike nature to self-preservation, too, almost like we are kind of looking to be loved, looking for the love we might not have gotten early on.
Uh-huh.
So, again, we seek to be, like, charming and playful and fun-loving and funny and focus a lot on pleasure and sort of being fun as a way of attracting people and
sure.
friends.
Right,
and
right.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, I'm an eight, which
mm-hmm.
can be intimidating. And
yes.
And my subtype is the social connection to group. What do you call that?
Right. The social instinct. It's interesting. These are animal instincts,
uh-huh.
and it's a little bit like, you can see in the animal world, getting along with the herd is a good thing.
Sure.
And when we do workshops on instincts and subtypes, we actually show videos of, like, swarms of sardines and the way they swim all together.
Uh-huh.
And certainly in earlier eras of human history, when you didn't survive unless you were in a tribe.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can see that a little bit more. But it's even like that today. It's almost a sensitivity to what's going on with other people. What's going on in the group. Sometimes it shows up as concern for social causes.
Yes.
And social eights in particular can be they tend to be very protective of others.
Uh-huh.
They tend to be, sometimes eights can be perceived as being more, usually eights do conflict more easily than other types. Most eights don't say they don't really like conflict, but they
right.
can do it. They,
yeah.
They're not afraid of it.
Yes.
Eights are, the social eights a little more mellow, a little less aggressive, but they usually relate to being assertive,
uh-huh.
But very tuned into other people, especially people that need protection or might be being exploited by others. So, for instance, I see a lot of social eights getting involved in causes of animal rescue or
oh, yeah, that's me.
Children
yeah.
or women who have been abused or
uh-huh.
things like that. Very sensitive to underdog causes and ways that they can use their strength for good in the world to protect those who may not be as strong.
Yeah, and from my perspective about my own journey, it feels really important to me to show up and be a leader to help the collective, so to speak.
Yes.
And, you know, part of how I'm doing that is within the context of the consciousness realm. And for a long time, it was within the energy healing realm. But that's like, that's such an integral part of my mission here, that if I didn't have that piece, I would feel like I wasn't fulfilled.
Right. And even this radio show is a great example of that,
mm-hmm.
right? Getting
right.
the message, important messages out about
Absolutely.
Important topics, about, you know, what you talk about to a lot of people all at once.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've had people say to me, well, does it, having your show bring in a lot of more business? And it's like, well, you know, I thought about that at the very beginning, but really I'm not featuring myself. It's kind of like my community service to the world is
yes.
to have these conversations, because I'm so mission-based in that respect.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just kind of spot on for me.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example.
So, can you share with our listeners a little bit about somebody who's got the subtype of the one-on-one kind of, intent?
Sure, yeah. There's, I'll talk a little bit about sort of my assistant who's kind of works with us and coordinates our events. She's a 1-to-1 8.
Uh-huh.
And 1-to-1s tend to be a little bit more of a laser-like focus on one other person. And
uh-huh.
It's not just, sometimes there's like a lot of focus on the partner, but it's more like one person at a time.
Right.
It can be,
right.
You know, more than one person in their lives. But they tend to have a lot of intensity and a lot of energy and just a real focus. It can sometimes feel like that other person is everything.
Uh-huh, right.
So a lot of needs can get met through that other person or through a key relationship.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of energy to make relationships happen, to really sort of move toward people in an active way, to express interest. People who are 1-to-1 2s, I always say I envy them because they tend to be really good at flirting.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, which I think is such a great. It's like how you kind of create relationships with this sort of, with a kind of, energy of personal appeal and
uh-huh.
kind of creating a space where you can make a connection in a certain way. So, they tend to be, and it's also an energy behind creativity.
Oh, interesting.
So they can often be very generative and creative especially when they're in a good space.
Mm-hmm. This is fascinating. We're going to go to another quick break, but when we return, I'm going to share with you how you can connect with Beatrice, and we're going to talk about how the Enneagram can relate to leadership and bosses. Stay tuned for more with Beatrice Chestnut here in just a few moments. Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
Heaven on Earth, your online school of divinity, building your inner coach as you lay down your foundation in the new earth with you as the authority. Take action now. The number one challenge people face every day is the negative voice in their head. We work each day to turn negatives into positives. It's all a matter of perception. Our challenge at this time is to remain intensely positive and focused, creating the world we wish to live in. Wake up on purpose with Cornelia's daily online positive messages guiding us in the new paradigm. Raise yourself into happiness and inner peace daily. Elevate your personal frequency, free from negativity, and reprogram yourself step by step, shifting your energy patterns with positive repetition, daily building your new earth with someone you trust. All the heavy lifting has been done for you. Wake up happy with CorneliaStephanieVIP.com. Try free for 7 days now.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio and in the gazillion syndicated places this ends up after the fact. Thank you for joining us here, and this hour is flying by. Beatrice, before we go any further, I want you to share with our listeners how they can connect with you and what events you might have coming up.
Sure. They can learn about my workshops and other things on my website, which is beatricechestnut.com. We're coming out with a new website at the end of the month that's going to be more about the Enneagram School that my business partner and I are starting, which will be called Chestnut Pious Enneagram Academy. But BeatriceChestnut.com is the place, and we have we do workshops for professionals who want to use the Enneagram in the workplace and with clients. We also do inner work retreats where we help people kind of go deeper and make some deep inner shifts using the Enneagram as a tool. And we have a professional workshop coming up at the end of February and our first retreat called The Real Enneagram at the beginning of March in California, Northern California.
And if somebody wants to just get an assessment to figure out what type they are, what subtype they are, how do they go about doing that?
Sure. There's a couple ways. We have the one test that I refer people to, because a lot of online tests really aren't very good when it comes to the Enneagram, is something called, it's put out by a company called Integrative Enneagram Solutions, and that's by far the best test. It's an online test. It takes about 30 minutes, and it comes out with a report. But another way is to do a typing interview. I do 90-minute typing interviews with people and, you know, ask a whole lot of questions and then usually help guide them toward, you know, the one or two types that I think they probably are.
Right.
And so those are probably two of the basic ways. Sometimes people just read books and kind of find themselves in one of the types they read about. But those are the ways I would recommend.
It's funny because when I first started to figure it out, try to figure it out by reading the book, I was identifying with so many aspects of the various types that I wasn't sure. But once I took the survey and some system was typing me for me, it was much easier for me to see, oh, yeah, this is me.
Yeah, I think it's hard to find your type because people identify pieces of themselves in different types. And it makes sense that we have connections to at least four other types, the types right next to us on the circular diagram, and the two types that we're connected to with the internal arrow lines that are within the Enneagram symbol. And so it makes sense that it can be hard to find your type. And so there is a bit of a learning curve with the Enneagram, but I think if people invest the time in understanding it a bit, it pays off a lot.
And based on what I read here, it was also fascinating for me to think in terms of, you know, other people in my life and what types they are. And so I know that there's probably a lot of inner work you can do. But also it seems like it would be helpful for relationships as well, including bosses. And you've got an entire book on the nine types of leadership.
Right.
So why is it important to know, like, what kind of leaders we are or what kind of leaders we need to deal with at the office?
Well, I think, first of all, some people feel like there's a leader type and that not all types can be leaders. And so one of the things I wanted to emphasize is that everybody has leadership ability, that it just tends to take a different shape. And so sometimes people think, well, I can't be a leader because I'm like this. And so I thought it was good to highlight the strengths that different types naturally have and can develop, but also the challenges that particular leaders have so that they can be better.
Yes.
I think that probably the key aspect of any leader in being a good leader is having the ability to observe themselves and notice what their strong points are, but also what their blind spots and challenges are. And the leaders that can't look at that get defensive around feedback, that I think aren't very successful in the long run.
And to have a sense of how we can affect others, even if we're doing something that isn't like really what psychologists would call the shadow side, so to speak, but it's just kind of like, for instance, I think I can be rather intimidating. And it surprises me sometimes because I'm just sort of straightforward and bold, and it's just who I am, and I don't try to be intimidating, but I've come to learn that people can be intimidated by me. And so reading about type 8 helps me to understand that that's sort of naturally who I am, and this is the reaction that people who are working with me could have.
Exactly. It helps people understand other people so they can just have more empathy, so they can see more where they're coming from and find ways to work together in a more easy way. Like sometimes you'll have a leader who is, you know, causing a problem because they can't make a decision.
Right.
And so to understand, for the leader themselves to understand, say they're a six, and why they can't make a decision, and have compassion for themselves, but also realize how that has a negative effect at work, you know, as a leader, and how they can work on that. It sort of frames the whole thing as just a normal human issue rather than people having faults and not being able to grow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So how can we use the Enneagram to create change in our lives?
I think the Enneagram helps us see with more clarity the ways we get in our own way and the ways we may not see that we get in our own way. And so recognizing, you know, I tend to do this thing and it's actually not really serving me. And so the Enneagram, it gives us a little bit more of an objective map of our strengths and our challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes our challenges are simply us overdoing our strengths and not creating a wider repertoire of strategies.
Oh, that's interesting. Say that again, because I think this is a really important point.
Yeah. So, I mean, so many times people want to focus on strengths, and I think that's a good thing. But sometimes people overuse their strengths to the point where they don't recognize different strategies that they may need to add to their toolkit that can actually help them be more flexible, adaptable, do more things in their lives, and not be kind of stuck in sort of doing the same thing over and over again, even when different strategies would actually be more effective.
Right. That's fascinating. We have run out of time. I want to share with our listeners again your website. It's BeatriceChestnut.com. That's BeatriceChestnut.com. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Just to say I appreciate anyone who's doing the inner work and is dedicated to their own growth. I think it's both good for individuals and also for the community. So, and I appreciate you doing the show. I think it's a really beautiful thing. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's been a joy, and I've really enjoyed your books. And I'm fascinated by this. It's like there's so many systems out there, and this is very informative for me. Anyway, if you happen to celebrate Christmas, and I know there are a lot of you out there, and you're listening to this before Christmas, I want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. I will be here before 2019. I'll be here again next week. Thanks for joining us here today. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.